VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And it is an absolutely magnificent day in Northeast Florida. I was telling Adam and the real estate folks and such that I sauntered in from, I parked the car quite a ways away and just sort of took baby steps all the way in, trying to postpone it as long as possible.
It is
first time it's been that comfortable in weeks.
Yep, great day for soccer games and football games like that, and Alan Jackson concerts.
Oh, is that tonight?
That's tonight.
Oh, yeah. Right. I was also telling them that we had a funny experience this week. On Thursday night, we went to a party, and a football game broke out.
That was pretty fun, despite the weather, which was not nearly as nice as it is now.
And when I got home, my wife said that the weather map, the radar map, showed a little circle of weather sitting right on the stadium.
That's what my sister said the same.
Everybody else home watching outdoors and all that. Pretty funny. But wow, congratulations to the Jaguars. It looked like a death blow when Foles got hurt. Not so much.
No, very pleasantly surprised.
Yes, I want to be his agent next year.
Yeah, no doubt.
We'll be working on that one.
Well, he's on a rookie contract, so he's got a few years, but yeah. Someday.
Yep. Anyway, that was so nice to see. The city needed it, and the fans certainly needed it. It was just fun, and the party was great.
Yep.
So, hey, what the heck? Anyway, back to business. There's a lot of things to talk about today. We will, of course, have a trivia question, which if I can remember, I'll get out of here before the quarter hour break. And several topics, but most importantly, what we have is you out there. And if you want to talk about something that's on your mind or questions you have, anything like that, just pick up the phone. Lines are open, 904-222-8255. It's 222-TALK. And we will, as always, put callers right to the head of the line. So if we start getting into some territory you don't like, change it. Call us. That's easy. Meanwhile, this market was going really well this week, and then the Chinese decided they were going to skip a plant tour, literally.
I don't know that it was going really well. I mean, it was going to end up down regardless.
If it had surged at the end, we would have gotten there.
The Dow was still a little bit negative. It was flat. Yeah. It was flat going into Friday.
It was a nothing week, which is a plus to me.
Which is kind of surprising considering how much news there was this week. Because there was a lot of news.
It was a news week, wasn't it?
Yeah. It started off on Monday. Actually, I think it was Sunday night when the drones hit the Saudi Arabian oil production and knocked off about 50% of their production. Now, if this had been a few years ago, 10, 15 years ago, this would have caused major, major upheaval in the oil markets. And it still did a little bit. But one of the benefits that, whether that was intended or unintended, of American production becoming such a big producer of oil is that now it's not nearly as big of a deal as it used to be. The market reacted. Oil surged about 14%. But then the next day, Saudi Arabia said we're getting them back online, and it kind of just came back in line. Oil did end up for the week, but it wasn't a crazy $100 a barrel spike.
Now, and the administration also announced that if it was required to do something to balance the world market, they would draw from the strategic reserve.
Yeah, and that would have been the same response either way, but I do think that years ago, this would have been a much more dramatic reaction in the oil markets than what we saw on Monday, which really wasn't that bad. And it was great if you had purchased some USO on Friday, which I didn't.
Now, when your kids are out of college just 10, 15 years from now, there won't be a problem like this because we won't be using any fossil fuels by then.
I mean, I don't know that we won't be using any, but we won't be using as
many. Depends who you listen to.
I guarantee you we won't be using as many.
Now, that part is absolutely true. That's just market-based forces.
So that was how the week started. Then Wednesday, we got a rate cut, which was 25 basis points.
And big yawner.
Usually causes a lot of mayhem in the market. We like to joke that you never know which day is going to be which, but it always seems like there's one up day and one big up day and one big down day right after our rate hike. And that didn't happen.
No.
We saw some intraday moves, and then by the close, Wednesday and Thursday, the market was pretty flat. So kind of a surprising reaction to a rate cut, which is not really needed, except that the market's expecting it, and we're trying to stay competitive with foreign markets at this point. Really confusing time for the Fed, and I don't envy their job, so I'll put it
either.
That way.
I never have, though.
But I would say that because the market didn't react in a big way, they did the right thing.
Even though they're apolitical on paper.
Yeah.
You're not apolitical when the president of the United States is pointing his finger at your nose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true.
So you try, but you can't win that one.
As you mentioned earlier, the only news that the market really did react to this week was on Friday, the delegation from China canceled the visit to some farms. We have no idea why. It could be because they just felt like they didn't need to go, or who knows. But the market didn't like it, still showing you that this whole market is predicated on what happens with the China deal. And as the China deal goes, so goes the market. So we dropped about 150 points on Friday, which really is a pretty muted drop.
Yeah. No biggie.
Based on that news, which we don't really even know anything about why it happened. So I wouldn't get too concerned about that. If that had happened on a Thursday and it wasn't going into the weekend, we probably wouldn't have dropped quite as much. But it happened on Friday afternoon, and that's how it goes. So despite that drop, the market held up pretty well. The Dow was off about 1%, the NASDAQ 0.7%, and the S&P 0.5%. The top performing S&P sector was utilities, which gained almost 2%, 2.25% this week. Healthcare and energy also ended the week in positive territory. The largest drop we saw was in consumer discretionary at just under 2%. International was pretty mixed. We saw a big drop in China and Hong Kong of just over 4%. Mexico and Canada both posted small gains for the week, and the European markets were flat. Gold and silver rallied a bit. Natural gas, which has been a really volatile sector this year, dropped almost 4%. Trying to guess where natural gas is going is a losing game. Don't attempt it. Bonds pushed back up a little bit this week, and the long treasury ETF gained almost 4%. I mean, talk about a volatile sector. Have you ever seen a bond ETF move like TLT is moving?
The historically least volatile asset class has now become the volatility leader.
It's crazy. The one really nice thing about this week was that the economic data beat expectations across the board. There was one report from the New York Fed that missed expectations, and everything else was either met or beat, which we haven't seen that in a long time. Jobless claims came in at 208, slightly higher than last week, but still topping expectations. There was some really positive housing data released over the week. Home builder sentiment was up. Housing starts and building permits were also up, both beat by more than 100,000, and are now at their highest level since 2007. A lot of that came in multifamily housing in the Northeast, but that's actually a good sign. Most of the growth has been the South and West, so seeing the Northeast show some signs of life is encouraging.
Yep. We're going to wrap this market up a little bit more right after the break, but I did want to try to introduce the trivia question, sponsored as usual by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. Call Ken at 636-7888. There's been a lot of controversy about the value of a college education these days. What percentage of recent college graduates are working in jobs that do not require a college degree? That is the question. So give me your percentage and you win a prize. We'll be right back. This is the Banway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banway.
And I'm Adam Banway.
And on the phone, we have Red. Good morning.
Good morning. Keep up the great work. You guys are awesome.
Thanks so much.
You're quite welcome. I want to say 61% on the college degree individuals doing jobs not related to their...
You're kind of on the right track, but you're a little too high.
Oh, okay. Well, only one guess, Final Jeopardy, so I'll have to pass on.
You got a lot closer than I did.
Yep. You will.
And it's funny, 90% of the few 15 or so that I know, the places I go with restaurants and businesses, and I know they have college degrees because I know their families, and it's like, it's about 15 or 17 individuals. One's an engineer. He got laid off 2 years ago. He's helping to run a coffee shop. I mean, he's good at it, but, I mean, you know, we can't just get an engineer job due to his age and not a lot of experience, you know, but it's just something, wow. Mm. But keep up the great work, and Clay County and Orange Park says you're awesome.
No, we appreciate it. Thanks so much. Have a good day.
All right, bye-bye.
Adam had a little experience like that when his timing proved to be fairly bad coming out
of
MBA.
Yeah.
You don't know when you enter a college program what economy is going to greet you as you pick up your sheepskin.
Actually, I entered it, and it was one of the best economies we've ever had. It was right before the dot-com bubble burst. And by the time I got out, 9/11 had happened. It was not a good time to be looking for a job.
No, it was.
So I spent a few months waiting tables. It was a good experience, and but then I found a job and moved on.
Aftermath of 9/11 included. Good morning, Paul.
Well, the previous caller helped narrow it down for me.
Yeah.
I think his guess was 61%. You said that was too high.
Correct.
So I'm going to go with 52%.
Again, you're all thinking well, but that's still a little too high.
You know, really, college educations have been overrated and overvalued for too many decades. Unless you're going into a specialty field like law, medicine, or engineering, you really don't need a college education anymore.
I just was doing a little research this morning along those lines, and the people who were writing this, who have spent a pretty good amount of time studying it, they said their rule of thumb is that if your starting salary will be as much more as the loan you're going to take out to get it, just one-to-one, that's the break-even point. Don't do it if you can't get it all back in 1 year, so to speak, even though you know you're not going to pay it all down. But their point was you'll be able to amortize this in 10 years easy.
Okay.
Yeah, which makes sense to me. But you're right.
Another thing, too, look at how the price of college education, you know, the tuition, how it has grossly outpaced the rate of inflation over the past 40, 45 years. In the early 70s, I remember my dad groaning about having to write a check for $3,000. That same college where I went today, it's now $48,000.
Wow.
I actually have some numbers on that in my stack, too. Maybe I'll find them in the next break.
And mine is over double what it was when I went there as well. And it was expensive when I went there 20 years ago.
Well, the worst thing, perhaps the worst thing that's happening to too many people is they go on these percentage of income programs. And because the interest rates are so high, they don't pay off their debt. They go deeper into debt.
Yeah.
And there are times when this mushroom is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And you can't get out of those debts, so what are you going to do? You're going to be strapped with that. They said it's taking the average college graduate 20 years to save up a 20% down payment for a home because they're too busy paying off their school loans.
Wow.
Yeah, this is not a good thing for society in general, and I'm glad we're addressing it.
But the thing is, there are still statistics that also show that college is a good decision because on average, a person with a college degree earns $1 million more over their lifetime than someone without a college degree. So they can pay off, but if you take a loan out for $250,000 to earn that extra million, probably not a good deal.
Yeah, exactly right. It's just like paying off a credit card at that point. It's hard to do. But we appreciate it. Thank you. And couple more things on the market itself. I think Adam alluded to the first-time layoffs being down again. Mm-hmm. It was actually the lowest number since the 1960s on the actual one.
It was actually up from last week.
It was,
by 2000, but still really low.
Yeah. So when you're down in the 160-something range with 330 million people.
Yeah.
A little dyslexic today.
That's all right.
Anyway, when you're down with numbers like that and you look at the population that we had in the 60s, you realize just how remarkable this economy is right now.
Yeah.
You want a job, you can get a job.
If you want a job, actually, speaking of that, if you want a job right now, a couple of different options for you. Amazon has 30,000 open positions right now, the most they've ever had in the history of the company. UPS is hiring 100,000 seasonal workers to handle the holiday rush from Thanksgiving to January. And because of a new labor deal, they are now paying $14 to $30 an hour for those hires, up from an average of 10 last year.
And if you do the math on that, you come out with something like a $2 billion extra expense for the season.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to wonder, man, how many dollars are they going to make out of this? And then you open up the paper this morning and read that FedEx just plummeted yesterday because they didn't make their numbers.
Well, they had a little deal with Amazon that wasn't renewed, and that may have played into it.
Oh, you think the shock value was somewhat reduced by that?
No, it was still a pretty big miss, and their stock dropped, I think, more than it had on any earnings day ever.
I think so, yeah. But you know, those things are just reshuffling the chairs on the Titanic, as far as I'm concerned, because somebody picks all that up.
Yeah, well, Amazon's doing it themselves. Yeah. I think that's why they canceled the deal.
Yeah, the 30,000 people.
I don't believe they're not going to use FedEx at all anymore. They just don't have that exclusive deal with them.
Somebody was telling us in the office the other day that if you want to be your own boss, that Amazon will front you the money to become an Amazon exclusive distributor, buy you the truck, paint it all up, and give you all the work you can handle. You're in business for yourself with no money down.
Yeah, that's called the owner-operator model. And if someone will front you to do that, you can make a really good living, especially once you pay off that truck. Yeah. You can really do well.
But you got to hustle. One thing about Amazon, don't go there and expect not to work hard.
Right.
Because you won't last. How does a guy get to be the richest guy ever? By eking everything he can out of his business, right? So. Love him or hate him, and believe me, on various days, it can go either way. Anyway, if you're in the job market, you're very lucky. If you're graduating or if you're going into your senior year, really consider, more so now, if you're going into college and just entering, really think about what you're doing and what you're spending, because you don't want to be one of these people. One more little news flash that happened this week. You may have heard about it. The financial system kind of ran out of money. And the repo market, called the repurchase market, needed some more cash, so we had a little spike in the rate for a day or so. And the Fed stepped in, and instead of doing what they usually do, they actually invoked the open market operations and flooded the market with some money. And now they're resuming QE3, and if there's one thing the stock market loves, it's QE.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they just love that. So I'm looking at the end of this year saying, we're up so far in September, good sign, and things are positioned right now where I think you're going to see a trend line that goes back into stocks. The demand should rise, demand for bonds should fall, and the yield curve is reconfiguring, still not totally back to normal. But I think this year is going to wind up just outstanding for stocks.
There's a lot of things that would lead me to believe that, but I thought that about last year too. So
yeah, well, December isn't always weird like that, but it sure was last year. The point in general is you can't time the market.
No.
Diversify your holdings and kick back and see what happens. If you're in the market the smart way, you are going to win eventually.
Yeah, and this year has been a big win for everyone who's been in all year. Right now, we're looking at the NASDAQ up over 22%, the S&P up over 19%, and the Dow up over 15%. So it's been a good year. Unfortunately, a lot of that was caused by the drop in December of last year. So if you look back 12 months from today, you don't look as good. But
subtract 6% off of what this year has done, and you pretty much describe it. And you still got a good year.
A little bit more than that, because it actually fell more than 6%. It ended
true.
Down after being up.
From the day after Christmas, we got some back. So what we're looking at here is just another pretty normal year that had a little excess volatility up front.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing, in my humble opinion, to worry about here. I really like equities at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you can't get any return on fixed income, so it's almost like pushing you into equities.
Of course, as people tell us, it's very important to have the right equities. And, of course, these are the people who do things like write newsletters, so they're going to tell you what to buy. Seems like there was a high flyer that sort of tumbled a bit.
Are you talking about Roku?
I am indeed.
Brutal. Yeah, it was the best performing stock, or one of the best performing stocks through the first half of the year, but in the last few weeks, it has, I mean, the stock chart looks like it fell off a cliff. I mean, it is bad. So hopefully you got out of it at the peak.
Stock picking is a dangerous occupation.
Yep. You can look like a real genius for a while until you don't.
Or as Nick Murray likes to put it, it is possible to get very, very wealthy by under-diversifying. It is not, however, possible to stay very, very wealthy by under-diversifying. All that means is, why don't you just buy stock indexes? You're far better off to put your money behind asset allocation, which accounts for over 90% of your long-term gain, than you are trying to pick individual stocks and time the market by buying and selling them. If you don't learn anything else in investing, that will get you through. All right, after the break, we got all kinds of interesting topics. The trivia question's still out there. If you want to talk about some things, just give us a call. Otherwise, we'll get into a few things of interest to the two of us and hopefully to you also. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we still have our trivia question sitting out there. What percentage of recent college graduates are working in jobs that don't require college degrees? And we know from the previous callers that 52% is a little too high. Got a pretty open range down below that. A couple of quick things today. Have you ever thought about dealing with a financial advisor and decided probably the best thing to do would be to drop into a gargantuan company like a bank or a big brokerage or something? Yeah, I don't like it when people think that way. There's a couple things. Wells Fargo hit with $450,000 fine for failure to register its agents and supervisors in the Bay State, despite repeated warnings to do so by the regulator. Mm. Now, how stupid is that? I put this in the category of what else could possibly go wrong with Wells Fargo?
I was just going to say, at least they aren't in any other trouble. So.
No, exactly. This has been a comedy of errors that goes on for years.
It's crazy.
Weird. Raymond James. Everybody knows Raymond James, don't they? They got a big old football stadium down in Tampa.
They do.
Among other things. They have a lot of advisors, too, that, well, never mind. I wouldn't be one. But they had to pay $15 million to the SEC for having, shall we say, overcharged a bunch of things. Good morning, Leroy.
Good morning, Steve. I guess I will go with 42%.
Well, I didn't express on air that I would take it plus or minus 2%, but I always do that. And since the answer is 40%, I would have to say you nailed it.
Hey, thank you very much.
Sure, absolutely. We have your address. You think about
yes,
that. 40% of all the people who come out of college with a degree and get a job didn't need that 4 years or 6 years or whatever to get the job they got.
It's not just the 4 years, but all the money they spent.
And not only that, it's all the money they didn't earn for those 4 years.
Yeah.
And another statistic I pulled up while I was looking at this stuff this morning, half of all college student entrances result in a degree. In other words, half of them don't. Within 8 years. Only half of them have a degree within 8 years. College is under the microscope right now, and I am so grateful that it is. College tuition is going up at four times the rate of inflation, and the government is promoting that by giving them all kinds of money. So it's a system that is badly in need of repair, and a lot of young kids today are going to be a lot smarter to avoid that system. So the only question is, will they listen? I'm going to not answer that. Anyway, Leroy, we appreciate it. Thanks. Okay, he's gone.
Good. Yeah, but they're going to make it free. So just about the time I get my grad student loans paid off, I'm going to start paying everybody else's college tuition.
You know how many of you are out there?
About that.
There's going to be a lot of people who paid off their school loans who are not going to be happy with these free
proposals. I would say unhappy doesn't really capture my feelings.
Exactly.
On it.
Well, it's $1.48 trillion, for one thing, and they want to just ignore it.
So that 50% of those people can go work at jobs that they didn't need the degree to get.
Yeah. And then, in theory, it would be all taxable to them, but you know they'll waive that, too.
Sure.
Because, hey, they're the government. My God, people. What's happening? Deutsche Bank says S&P 500 is 13% overvalued, and there's a recession coming. I'm going to believe them? Speaking of troubled organizations.
Yeah, no doubt.
That's a big one.
They've had some issues.
Fed likely to cut rates again as economic threats loom. Really? Economic threats are looming, huh? Trump's war with California is destroying America. Who declared war, Trump or California?
Well, his latest thing kind of was declaring war.
Yeah, somebody makes the first strike and somebody retaliates. Just some of the lunacy that goes around the internet for free, and I love it every week. All right, how to take 0% financing into an actual number of dollars?
Yeah, sometimes 0% financing isn't 0%, and I have a pretty good example of that. I think we've all seen those deals where you buy something that costs a few thousand dollars and they offer to finance it at 0%, no interest if you pay it off within a year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever that might be. In general, as a financial planner, I'm a really big fan of those deals. They work out very well. You pay the same amount. You actually pay less if you look at it in real dollar terms, but you pay the same amount that is on the sticker that you would have paid up front, and you don't pay any interest like you would if you put it on a credit card. So it's a good deal if you do it right. And one of my family members recently did this with a piece of jewelry that they had made at Jared at the town center. Now, they had an excellent experience at Jared, and they said that the people there were great. It had really not much to do with them. They offered this financing program through a bank called First Community Bank, and it was 0% if you paid it off in a year. So they financed 100% of the purchase, got the first bill about a month later, and it said the minimum payment was about 1/12 of the balance. So, mm-hmm. You know, logically you would think if you pay 1/12 over the next 12 months, you won't end up owing any interest because you pay it off in a year.
Well, I haven't taken a math course for a while, but that added up pretty well to me.
Yep. So they did that and sent in the last payment and on time, actually a few days before it was due, and thought that was great. I got it all paid off, had a little party celebration, and then something else happened. They got another bill with a minimum payment due of $35. Well, how is that possible if you just paid off the total amount and there's no interest charges? Well, they looked at it, and they got charged 1/12 of the interest for the total amount they had financed. So 1 month of interest for the total amount that they had financed. They called the company, obviously pretty ticked off, or thinking maybe there had been an error. And they said, no, that's correct. You purchased this item about a month before we sent you the first statement, and the clock started ticking on that day. So when you made that last payment, you were a few days out of the 12 months. And the thing that really gets me about this is that they purposely made the minimum payments 1/12 of the total so yeah, that this exactly. would happen.
So, yeah.
And it's not really a scam, but it is a really disingenuous way to do business.
It's lack of disclosure.
It's terrible. It's terrible. They knew that they would get that 1 month of interest out of them at the end because no one's going to read the fine print. It just really ticked me off. If you say it's a 12-month period that you have to pay it off, and it should be from the time you get your first bill.
And you're getting 1/12 of the...
Right.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So
you know that 98% of people who work with financial advisors believe that the financial advisor is always going to work as a fiduciary and put their interest first, they being the client.
Right.
98% of people believe they're being taken care of that way. 20% don't even know how their advisor is compensated.
Hmm.
People, if you're working with an advisor and you don't know how he or she is paid, it is not their fault. It is your fault. You have to ask. Another little goodie, since we only have a few seconds left. I'll get into some Social Security stuff right after the break. But a former advisor stole more than $3 million from his clients, and he claims, quote, "I knew it was wrong as I did it." Okay. Okay. You knew it was wrong if you did it, when you did it. Okay. It was in Redmond, Washington. So everybody out there is rich and famous, right? Or at least one guy. Anyway, in 07, he started promoting a private fund, his own, called Sweetwater Income Fund, which he launched the next year with money from 20 clients. And it was about $3.1 million. He got the total investment up to $7.3 million. And a funny thing happened. That $3.1 million was never seen again. This was a non-publicly traded entity. And how many times? I know I bore some people to tears with this. Every minute of every day, if you're working with an advisor, you have to be able to go to an independent third-party website who you knew about before you even got here, one of the famous ones, there's only about five or six, and you have to be able to log into your own account and see what's happening 24/7, 365. Because if you can't see it, expect something bad, and you'll get it, trust me. All right, a real-life question on Social Security came up in the office a couple of weeks ago, and I promised a little bit of an explanation, and I'll get into it right after the break, so do not go anywhere. I'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
One more little quick piece of stupidity. This kind of stuff just always makes me happy. The European Central Bank's new, what do they call them, director or whatever, says that Libra-like stable coins, that means basically cryptocurrency, right?
I think that's the Facebook crypto that they're proposed.
Could challenge the U.S. dollar for the reserve currency of the world? If you needed another reason to abolish central banking, I just gave you one. They're all alike. People, you can't escape them. Wow. All right, so it came up the other day. A couple came in the office, and they were wondering, one of the great decisions, and frankly, one of the decisions that lasts the longest in any decision you'll make, just due to the nature of the thing, is how to claim Social Security benefits, which not only means how, but when. And there's a lot of complexity to it. And his immediate question was, what earnings count for Social Security? So I gave him the most direct pinpoint answer that money can buy. I said, well, that depends. It's about as concise as I can get on this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It depends if you're talking about how much money you're going to receive, when you're going to receive it, or how much of it's going to be taken away. And believe me, there's a lot that can be taken away. So I said, I can't handle this now. It is just too complicated. And I started working on it. And it's going to have to be broken up into pieces a little bit because it is so complicated. But fundamentally, when it comes to how much money you're going to get, which is, of course, probably the major consideration for most people, those earnings are only yours. You can have a wealthy spouse. You can have a non-working spouse. It does not matter. How much money you're going to get is dependent on your earnings record, and that goes for both of you. So if you want to figure out what you're going to get, it's as easy as going on the Social Security website and pulling up your account, and if you don't have one, you can create one online, and you look. And what Social Security does is it takes your top 35 years of earnings. But it doesn't count all of your top 35 years of earning because sometimes you earn more than the Social Security limit. So it's what you paid in, the highest 35 years that you have paid into the system, that is applied to a formula that arrives at your benefit. Now, let's say you file and keep working. If you pay in more because of your current job than you paid in any year in the past, all the way back to If you don't even have 35, it just adds on. If you do have 35, if it's bigger than the smallest one, they replace it. So it's a constant moving target as long as you're working and having money. But key to this thing is it is based on your earned income. So I went into this Social Security department and copied down what they consider earned income. Earned income is wages, net earnings from self-employment, certain royalties, honoraria, and sheltered workshop payments. Now, I don't get any of those other things, unfortunately. Some people do. If you wrote a good song or have an oil well or something, royalties may come pouring in. Those are considered earned income. What is not earned income is things like Social Security itself, because that's based on an insurance policy, not a job. It is not a pension payment. It's not the required minimums from your 401ks and IRAs. Those things are called unearned income. Even though you have earned the benefit, it is not earned income. If you have a business that you are active in and you do a 1099 or a W-2, those are, because those are basically your employment, even though the employer is you. So they count Social Security earned income, and it's counted up to the limit, which I believe now is, what, $132,900 a year is included in earned income, something like that.
Yeah, roughly.
Above that, you pay Medicare on it, but you don't pay Social Security on it. And you didn't pay Medicare on it until George H.W. Bush decided to lift the lid on it, and I never forgave him for that. That's another story. I digress. So if you want to know what your earned income is, most of you can find it very easily. Go to your 1040 form and look at line one. It says wages, salaries, tips. That's earned income. There's only really one other line for most people that counts, and that's the one that says income from business. So if you file a Schedule C or an 1120S or something like that for your income on your personal business, or even if you're working for somebody else as a contract employee, that 1099 also counts. So that's number one. Now, if you get into how much am I going to get, it becomes a lot more complicated than that. And the formula for doing this has so many variables on it that I'm just going to have to take a lot of time over the next few weeks and hit some of the highlights. But when you're coming down to the original big decision you have to make, which is when should I file? Well, there's a lot in play there, because there's something called full retirement age, which in Social Security today is a moving target. Depending on when you were born, your full retirement age is either 65, 66, or 66 in a month or two, three, four, five, all the way up to 67. And it's as easy as looking it up on a chart by the date of your birth. Now, if let's say you were born on December 31st, or January 1, better yet, January 1 birthdays out there, you were born last year for Social Security. These are the little things that make these things difficult. But if you, my full retirement age, 66. Let's use that for an easy one. So if I wait till 66 to file, I get exactly what it says on my Social Security statement. That's it. Now I'm still working, so I add to it. I got a raise last year of $8. I was really impressed.
That was net, though, right? You had a gross raise that was higher.
Oh, no. They bumped up my Medicare by 108.
Oh, okay.
So I came out really well. Negative. Anyway, the money that you look at getting will grow if you wait every month. It grows a little bit up to age 70. Beyond 70, file, because you're not getting any more by waiting. But what really kills most people is they want to file early. A huge percentage of America files for Social Security at 62. If you absolutely need it because you have no other source, fine, do it. But if you don't have to, don't do it, because you will be penalized for the rest of your life by a reduction of about 32% in what you would have gotten by waiting, and you could add another 32% if you could delay it even beyond your normal retirement age, full retirement age. So when you're considering filing, remember that it is a lifetime punishment for you to file early, and most people don't understand that. Also, if you're a spouse and you want to file off of the other spouse's income, but you're not a full retirement age yet, sure, you can get half of your partner's Social Security, no problem. But it's going to be reduced the same percentage-wise as if you had filed for your own at that age. And again, that lasts forever. There is only one date, one filing date for every person out there, and it determines what they do to you for the rest of your life. And of course, just to make it interesting, there is an exception. If you have just filed within the last 12 months and you are under your full retirement age, you might decide you made a mistake. Maybe you get an unexpected job or a windfall. Say, oh, my God, I'm sorry I did that. You have a one-time chance in your life, which starts at the day you file and goes for 12 months exactly. You are allowed to repay every penny that you have received, and they erase your filing. So you they treat you as if you have never filed before. So let's say you filed at 62 and got a job later that year. You've been drawing benefits, and all of a sudden you're making so much money that you're getting penalized by the deferral thing that I'll talk about next week. But you really wish you hadn't filed. Well, don't give up. You can repay every penny that you've gotten so far, write them a check, and it never happened. Problem with that is you've probably spent a bunch of it. A bunch of it's probably been taxed. You may not have it. It might well be worth going to the bank and taking out a short-term personal loan to do this. It works very easily. We actually did that once. My wife and I did it many years ago on hers, and it was smooth as silk. So only one time, only for 12 months, do you have a chance to undo what you did. And that should tell you one thing more than anything else in the world. Be careful. Don't file until you talk to somebody who knows what they're doing. And don't believe that there are too many people out there who know a whole bunch about what they're doing. I wouldn't even trust a single person at the Social Security Administration. You shouldn't trust us 100%, but we're happy to talk about it because we do it a lot. So more on this topic next week. And we'll talk about some of the other limits and penalties and so on. Meanwhile, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. Same time, same station. Go out and enjoy the weather. This is the Benway Financial Hour.